This is A Girl's Gotta Do, written by Kirawa and read by Tipsy Kitty. Chapter 1. The bathroom door shuddered as the snarling werewolf slammed into it. One more hit and the lock would buckle. Jo stopped her frantic search through the cupboard under the sink for something, anything, to use as a weapon. She braced her back against the door and pushed back, trying for a few more seconds of life so she could think her way out of this. The werewolf had grabbed her shotgun, loaded with silver sabot rounds, and tossed it, fuck, somewhere. Jo was out of ammo for her Glock. She heard a blood-curdling howl and a series of crashes. Apparently, the monster was taking its frustrations out on its own furniture. Jo still had her dad's knife, but it was blessed iron, not silver. Maybe if she opened an artery, it would bleed out before it had time to heal? It occurred to Jo that it was quiet out there, and had been for at least a minute. No snarling, no howling, no more attempts to break down the door. Had the werewolf given up? There was a polite knock on the door. Jo froze, knife in hand, listening with adrenaline-sharpened senses. A soft sigh from outside. "Knock, knock," said a woman's voice. "Who's there?" Jo responded automatically. The werewolf she'd been hunting was a grizzled man in his 50s, when he wasn't all fangs and claws. "Orange," replied the voice. Feeling like she was stuck in some weird foreign film, Jo asked the obvious question. "Orange who?" "Orange, you gotta come out," the voice replied triumphantly. With a mental shrug, Jo unlocked the bathroom door and stepped out into a room that looked like it had been decorated in early post-apocalypse. The furniture was firewood, the man's library of books had been shredded, and there were a couple of human-sized dents in the wall. All of that was just window dressing. Center stage, there was a model pretty woman with long blonde hair, a brown leather jacket, and one of those fancy Arab scarves. She stood with one expensive black boot resting on the werewolf's corpse, as if she were posing for a safari photo shoot. The wearer's throat had been cut, Jo noted, probably with the knife holstered on the hunter's right hip. She wasn't visibly carrying any other weapons. There was a bit of blood spray on the woman's face. She absently licked her lips and smiled. The sight triggered a memory. Mom had called last week, warned her about a demon that was playing at being a hunter. "Cristo," Jo said. The thing flinched, eyes black, and Jo found herself tossed against the wall and held there by an invisible force. Fear rushed through her as Jo flashed back to the last time she'd been captured by a demon, Sam's gloating voice and huge, brutal hands. But Jo was a hunter. She'd started studying exorcisms after demons had killed Ash and burned the only home she'd ever known. Every time she woke shaking from a nightmare about being held helpless by that thing, she recited the ritual Romanum, over and over, like water flowing over the stone of her fear, until it was gone. Now the words came to her, prompted as much by her terror as by her need. "Exorcimus te," she whispered. The demon snarled and advanced on her. Jo continued, voice stronger. "Ominous mundus spiritus." The demon pulled the scarf off her neck, twirled it into a rope, and shoved it in Joe's mouth. "Hunters," she said, like it was a dirty word, as she tied the gag around the back of Joe's neck. "What's a girl gotta do to earn a little trust around here? I mean..." And now she was pacing around the room, gesturing wildly. "I offer to help Dean stay out of the pit, and he tries to off me. I offer to show Bobby how to reforge the most powerful weapon on the planet, and he wants to shoot me," she said, kicking a table leg out of her way. It embedded itself in the wall. Joe's heart pounded. The cotton of the scarf was dry against her tongue. Jo barely kept herself from gagging on it. She tightened her fingers around her dad's knife, waiting for her chance to take the demon out. "Your mother splashed me with holy water when I tried to give her a lead on a demon possession. That shit burns, you know." She was strutting closer, moving like a predator, and all Jo could do was watch. "I save your life, and this is the thanks I get?" Now she was close, right up in Joe's face as she was pinned to the wall. "I don't mean to get personal, but you hunters all have some serious trust issues. I think..." The demon broke off, a funny look on her face, and sniffed delicately. "You're wet. Wait, is this shit turning you on?" she said, incredulously. "Oof," Jo protested. "It was a stress reaction. It didn't mean anything." "It is. Oh, this is rich." The demon was wearing the same smile she'd had while licking blood from her lips. "Ellen's little girl likes guns and knives and ropes and gags and pussy," she sang to herself. It wasn't true. Jo had never been with a woman. She flirted with the pretty young hunters to give her mama moving targets. Fucked the older scarred ones who had something to teach her. There weren't many women hunters, and Joe didn't do civilians. Couldn't ignore their stupid chatter about salaries and sports teams and TV long enough to get off. So it hadn't really come up. What she thought about in the privacy of her own bed, rubbing off at night, didn't count. The demon backed off. "Now that's just not fair," she drawled. "Here I am, trying to turn over a new leaf, and you're all..." Her eyes tracked slowly up and down Joe's body. Joe's nipples got hard from being stared at. "Yeah, like that. Well, sweetie, I'd love to play, but this is too important for me to screw up." She stepped close again and reached for Joe. Joe held her breath, but the demon only pulled Joe's cell phone out of her pocket and quickly programmed it. "Name's Ruby. Call me when you decide to graduate from the Bush Leagues and really make a dent in that pack of demons that slipped out of hell a few months ago." She shoved the phone back in Joe's pocket and walked away. "Don't worry, I won't tie you down and eat you up." Ruby paused on her way out and glanced back over her shoulder. "Not unless you want me to." She sauntered past the dead ware, long legs and peach-shaped ass on display in her tight jeans, leaving a trail of bloody boot prints out the door. It was another minute or two before Joe fell to the ground. She immediately sheathed her dad's knife, untied her gag, and dropped the scarf on the ground. Then Joe grabbed her cell phone and hit her mom's speed dial. She hung up before it connected, not sure what to say. Joe paused for a moment and picked up the scarf off the ground. She had to find her shotgun, make sure the house was clean of her prints, and get out of here before the dead ware's wife came home from work. Chapter 2. A week later, Joe was done. She'd traveled to Oxnard, California to hunt down a rumor of a black dog that was killing people. Turned out it was just a meth dealer with a pair of Rottweilers. She'd had to kill both dogs when the asshole sicked them on her, and had come about half an ounce of pressure on the trigger from taking the dealer out, too. The cops barely responded to gunshots in that neighborhood, so she got away easy. And so did the meth dealer. Midnight found her in a motel room across the county line, seriously considering going back, finding the guy, and putting a bullet in his head. Fuck. She needed a real hunt, with an evil son of a bitch to take down. Joe pulled out her phone and scrolled down her contacts list. Ruby's name was still there, right between Mom and Rufus. Joe was aware that a sudden desire to avoid moral ambiguity might be the stupidest reason ever to call a demon, but she didn't let that stop her. Ruby appeared on her doorstep before dawn the next morning. She told Joe to head south and briefed her in the car. Ruby said she had tracked down one of the escaped demons to a suburb of Dallas. Apparently, it had already run up a serious body count, and was crafty enough to have slipped away from Ruby twice. She claimed to have a knife that could kill the demon, but she needed a human partner to distract the thing and keep it from getting away as soon as it sensed her presence. "So that knife will kill any demon?" Joe asked. This was sounding more and more like she was getting jerked around. "Oh, not a Duke of Hell, or one of the Primuses. But your average demon, yeah. Only 3 Astrapi blades were ever forged. One's in the Vatican, one's lost somewhere in Tibet, and the last one's right here," she said, proudly patting the sheathed knife at her side. "So how'd you get your hands on it?" Joe asked skeptically. "Spoils of war, baby," Ruby purred. "Uh-huh." Joe pulled off the highway and into the parking lot of a church. "Quick resupply," she informed her demonic passenger. "Sure," Ruby said, snapping her gum. The scent of strawberry wafted across the car. Joe grabbed an empty milk jug from the trunk. Was she crazy, trusting this thing at her back in a hunt? There had to be at least a 50-50 chance that the two demons were the actual partners, and the trap was designed especially for her. She picked the lock, dragged the heavy church door open, and stepped inside. The church was an echoing quiet, smelling faintly of incense and pledge. The rising sun shone through a window, settling a peaceful golden glow over the sacred space. Joe felt herself slowly relax. Maybe if she hung out in here long enough, the demon would get the message and take off. A minute later, Ruby breezed by her and strode up to the altar. She stood staring at the life-size wooden Christ hanging on the cross. "I thought demons couldn't walk on holy ground," Joe blurted. "Common misconception," Ruby answered absently, still engaged in a staring contest with an effigy of the Son of God. "We can. It hurts, like, oh." She gave a connoisseur's pause. "I'm like walking on hot coals." Joe gaped at her. "Then why are you even in here?" Ruby shrugged and turned. "Got bored waiting in the car," she answered. "Look, I spent the last century in hell. You know hell, land of eternal torment? Hanging out in the employee break room of the pit hurts worse than this. Why do you think all the demons are so desperate to break out?" Joe considered. Demons lied, yeah. But if it was true, She had a real opportunity to gain some useful information here. So why are there so many stories about hunters successfully hiding out from demons on holy ground? She challenged the demon. Works against newbies, Ruby said, delicately pulling the chewing gum out of her mouth and sticking it to the back of a pew. They don't have the self-discipline to tough out a little present pain for a future reward. They're all rape, maim, kill, party all the time. Sort of like frat boys, she concluded with a wink. And this one we're up against? Not quite so fresh, but he'll still go for maximum carnage with minimum risk. Speaking of which, we need to hit him before he gets bored with flying under the radar and starts another massacre. You good to go? Joe considered. Two more questions, she said. Shoot, Ruby agreed. One, who's the woman you're possessing? What, this old thing? Ruby said wryly, tossing her hair. When she was very, very bad. Pretty packaging, and let's just say she was good with a knife before I took up residence. Trust me, the world's better off with me in the driver's seat. Okay, Joe said. And two, what's with you trying to stare down Jesus? Ruby's smile slipped away, and her eyes went demon dark. Oh, that. She threw a glance over her shoulder. It's never fun running into an ex. We done with the interrogation? She said sharply, striding towards Joe and the exit. Because I'm really in the mood to kill something. She slammed the door on the way out. Joe dipped the jug into the font, capped it, and carefully dried it off before following Ruby out of the church. Chapter 3. The demon had possessed some poor schmuck of a court reporter. Joe stopped by a drugstore. She picked up some blue eyeshadow, red lipstick, and a neon green water pistol. The water pistol held 10 ounces of holy water and fit neatly in her Glock 23's holster at the small of her back. The makeup made her look young, slutty, and stupid. A jeans jacket, clean but worn, and a few sizes too big, completed the white trash camo. Let me get this straight, Joe had protested. This demon crawls its way out of hell, slaughters a dozen people, then possesses this guy and goes to work? Ruby shrugged. He thought I wouldn't find him there. He was wrong. Joe took her watch off for the metal detector, smiled brainlessly at the marshal, and breezed on through the courthouse security. She walked up the stairs and into courtroom 229, where Ruby had told her the target worked. The door creaked as she walked in. The only one to look up was the defendant, a beefy, bald-headed white guy wearing a cheap suit. Joe made eye contact and smiled. She had no idea what he was charged with, but decided to give him a thrill in case they put him away. Besides, no one would question her being there if she looked like his girlfriend. She slipped past a few better-dressed women sitting in the front to get as close as possible to the demon and the court reporter he was possessing. Joe watched the court reporter out of the corner of her eye. The demon reporter, Bob, she decided to call him, looked bored out of his mind. He was randomly clicking away at his little typewriter with one finger, not even pretending to transcribe the testimony of the witness on the stand. A few minutes later, Bob stiffened and stood up, somehow alerted to Ruby's presence in the building. Joe put a hand on the wooden barrier in front of her and hurtled it, landing hard on the other side and pulling the water pistol from its holster at the small of her back. 10 feet. That was all the range this piece of shit water pistol had. Closer, closer, now. Joe pulled the trigger, and a stream of holy water hit the demon in the face. It screamed like a cougar. People were yelling, running away. Good. At least she'd gotten them out of the line of fire. As Joe reached the demon, it looked up at her, eyes black, and hissed as it backhanded her to the ground. Get off her, Joe heard, and then silence. Joe opened her eyes. The water pistol was on the ground a few feet away. Joe got to her knees and lurched for it. The demon picked her up. Joe felt a flash of blinding pain along her back as it slammed her into the front of the witness stand. Did she send you? The demon snarled at her, literally frothing at the mouth. Joe wished she had a free hand to wipe the spittle off her face. This whole pinned by demonic telekinesis thing was getting old. Joe opened her mouth to play for time, pretty sure that an exorcism would get her killed at this point. Yep, and I've got a message for you, she said, mind scrambling for something plausible. Over the demon's shoulder, Joe caught sight of Ruby stalking silently towards the demon's unprotected back, knife at the ready. Man, you are so screwed, Joe informed him. She's pissed. Ruby cleared her throat. The demon spun around as she lunged with her knife. It staggered back against Joe, convulsing. A strange sensation like a jolt of electricity passed through her. Joe felt the force of 3 more furious blows transmitted through its body to hers, before Bob's body slid to the ground, taking her with it. Jo shoved the still, heavy corpse off of her and rolled towards her water pistol. Ruby was staring down at the dead man, black-eyed and ready to strike again. Jo snagged the water pistol and staggered to her feet. "That looks personal," she said breathlessly, waiting to see if Ruby would turn on her now that the demon was down. Ruby shuddered and then quirked a smile at Jo, eyes back to Hazel. "When I saw he had you backed up against the stand like that, I got jealous. Thought I was the only one for you, baby," she joked, squatting down to wipe her blade clean on the dead man's pants. Jo relaxed and holstered her water pistol. "Oh, don't worry. If I ever decide to start slumming with demons, you're at the top of my list." "Aw, you sweet talker. And you even got all dolled up for me," Ruby said, gesturing at Joe's chest. Jo glanced down. There was a big, fresh bloodstain smeared across the front of her jeans jacket. "Fuck," she muttered. She would attract all the wrong kinds of attention. Jo stripped off her jacket, and after a moment's regret at the loss of a good piece of gear, her holster. No way could she conceal that under a t-shirt. Maybe she should start carrying a purse. No, it'd be in the way for firefights. When she looked around, Ruby was gone. Typical. Luckily, the blood hadn't soaked through to her shirt. Jo decided to hide her jacket behind the judge's bench. She found the defendant there, crumpled against the wall with his head at an unnatural angle. Damn. He must have been the one that shouted at the demon when it hit her. Another dead civilian, and this one was all her fault. She shouldn't have smiled at him. "Sorry," she whispered to the dead guy as she stuffed her jacket, water pistol, and holster under the judge's chair. Jo let tears well up in her eyes. She psyched herself up, let out a piercing scream, and then ran for the exit. "Oh my God, oh my God!" she wailed, throwing herself into the arms of the nearest, very startled, armed man on the other side of the door. "He stabbed him! The big bald guy stabbed him!" She sobbed incoherently when they tried to question her. It was an Oscar-worthy performance, inspired by a dozen utterly useless victims she'd saved in the past year. Chapter 4. 5 minutes later, Jo was wrapped in a blanket, sitting in the back of an ambulance while EMTs checked her over. 10 minutes later, she'd slipped away and made it back to her car. The fact that Ruby was waiting for her in the car was a surprise. The fact that Jo was glad to see her was an even bigger one. "You hurt?" Ruby asked awkwardly. Her eyes were glued to the scenery as they pulled onto the highway. "You were moving like you were hurt." Jo's back lit up with pain with every breath. "Well, it's not too bad. Bruised a couple of ribs, maybe." Ruby winced sympathetically. "Want me to pick up some painkillers for you?" Jo choked back a laugh. "And fuck, that hurt." Sure, she'd send the helpful demon out to pick her up some prescription meds. Would Ruby steal them from a hospital pharmacy? Jo wondered. Or murder a dealer for his stash? "No thanks. I got some Tylenol 3 in the first aid kit in the back." She couldn't drive like this. Jo pulled off at the first motel she saw and checked in. Ruby was still sitting in the passenger seat when Jo came out of the office with the key. "Don't you have somewhere to be?" Jo asked, sliding painfully into the driver's seat to park the car. "Nope," Ruby answered, not making eye contact. Jo parked in front of the room, cautiously got out of the car, and pulled her overnight bag and first aid kit out of the back seat. She was suddenly reminded of her first and only date with Jimmy, a soccer player from her senior chemistry class. There had been the same awkward, "Will he, won't he come in after dinner?" Only with less fear of her life, because Jo could have taken Jimmy out in a second if he tried anything. Which he hadn't. "Fine," Jo said dryly. "But just so you know, I'm planning on sleeping with a salt line and a devil's trap at the door." She expected some kind of sarcastic comment. Ruby nodded. "Give me a second to fill the ice bucket," she said. Once Jo made it into the room, she headed into the bathroom and downed a couple of Tylenol 3s while Ruby grabbed the ice bucket and headed back outside. Jo shuffled to the door. She sank to her knees with a groan, pulled a piece of chalk from her bag, and started drawing a devil's trap. Not her fault if Ruby wasn't back by the time she was done, she reasoned. The demon could sleep in the car, or wherever Ruby went, when she wasn't hanging around with hunters. There was a soft knock on the door before the trap was even half drawn. Jo shuffled backwards. "Come in," she said. Ruby stepped through the door without a word. She placed the ice bucket on the bedside table, picked up the remote off the TV, and sat on the bed. The bed. It hadn't even occurred to Jo to ask for two queens. Now this was going to be awkward. Jo was opening her mouth to tell Ruby to get out, when the demon suddenly said, "Twilight Zone okay?" She pulled off her boots. "The one from the 50s? There's a marathon tonight." The Twilight Zone. How fucking appropriate. Sure, Jo agreed. Why not? Why the hell not? Joe finished the devil's trap and sat gingerly down on the bed. "Take off your shirt," Ruby suggested. "I'll ice your back for you." Joe managed to get her shirt off, but trying to reach the clasp of her bra sent pain shooting down her back and side. "I got it," Ruby murmured. A moment's pressure, and then Ruby carefully lifted the bra away from Joe's body. "Come here," she said. "Scoot back a little and lean on me. That'll support you so you can watch TV while I apply the ice." The ice was cold and wet, but Ruby was pressed warm against her side, so Joe was comfortable enough. She felt drifty. The Tylenol 3 was definitely kicking in. "Why are you being so..." "So what?" Ruby asked gently. "So nice," Joe decided. "I can be nice," Ruby said, lips brushing against the back of Joe's neck. "I'm a little out of practice at it, but I can be whatever you want me to be." "You're weird for a demon." "Well, you're not the average hunter yourself, sweetie. I guess that's why we get along." "Mm-hmm," Joe agreed drowsily. On TV, Rod Sterling introduced a man who would sell his soul to the devil for a chance at eternal life. Chapter 5. Ruby was a terrific partner, Joe decided as she cleaned her Glock. She always had Joe's back, trusted her when things went sideways, and was teaching her basic spell work. They'd called up the spirit of a murdered man to answer questions about the monster that killed him, and used a ritual to track down sources of demonic energy on a map. Sure, she wasn't around 24/7. Ruby would take off for days at a time, when she had other stuff to take care of, or was running down a lead, and then show up out of nowhere. It worked out. Joe had never taken well to being smothered. Ruby looked grim as she opened the motel door. "This hunt's gonna be rough," she said, locking it behind her. "Think you're ready?" Joe put down her Glock and gestured to the rest of the arsenal she had spread out on the bed. "I think I got it covered." Ruby shook her head. "No, that's not..." She sighed. "Look, up until now, the demons we've taken out have been small fry. This one, she's different. Older, more powerful, more subtle. She's not going to attract attention with big showy massacres." "So how'd you find her? The map ritual?"
"No, Anunoku's too good for that. But she's got... let's call it a signature move. You ever heard of the McMartin abuse case? No? Then how about the Salem witch trials?"
"That was a demon?" Joe asked. Ruby nodded.
"This demon, she doesn't kill humans. She builds up fear and violence, feeds on it, intensifies it, until they kill each other off. There's a case in this little town in Iowa. I think it might be Anunoku getting her rocks off."
"What kind of case?" Joe said. She had a feeling she wouldn't like the answer.
Ruby stepped close, tilted Joe's chin up, and brushed a kiss across her lips.
"I don't want to bias you," she said. "Let's check out the town. Maybe I'm jumping at shadows."
They reached the town in time for lunch the next day. It wasn't little, it was tiny.
"Welcome to Conrad, population 1003, home of the comets," proclaimed a road sign.
"Carol's Country Kitchen sound good?" Joe asked as she drove down Main Street, hit the edge of town, and pulled a three-point turn. Ruby agreed. Good thing, too. It was either that, wait for the steakhouse to open for dinner, or drive back to the Dairy Queen they'd passed 20 minutes ago. Ruby, pale and distracted, followed her inside and slid onto the other side of the booth.
"You okay?" Joe asked. Ruby'd barely said a word for the past half hour.
"Yeah," Ruby murmured. "Just trying to keep a low profile." Joe suspected there was more to it, some kind of spell or energy work to hide them from the big bad. She decided not to bug Ruby for an explanation in public. There was only one other customer in the place. A guy with a buzz cut and a dirty gray sweatshirt was sitting at the counter, hunched over a bowl of beef stew that smelled mouthwateringly good. An older woman in an apron bustled out of the kitchen.
"Hello, ladies," she said with a cheerful smile. "I'm Carol. This is my place. What can I get you?"
"A bowl of that stew and a Diet Coke, please," Joe ordered politely.
"And for you, miss?" Carol asked.
Ruby was slumped in her seat, eyes closed. She didn't seem to notice that the waitress was talking to her.
"She'll have some fries, no salt," Joe said quickly. The waitress was staring at Ruby with open fascination.
"Sorry, we got up real early for the drive," Joe explained. "She's beat."
"Huh. You two visiting someone in town?" Carol asked.
Joe hit her surge of irritation. Spy satellites had nothing on interfering old busybodies when it came to gathering local intel.
"Well, we wanted to take a look at that property out on Route 96, Joe said. She'd noticed the for sale sign on the drive-in. "My husband has a friend who used to live in town. He said it's a great place for... Joe looked down shyly and curved a hand over her belly. For raising the family.
Oh, honey, congratulations, Carol crowed, peering down at Joe's stomach. You're first?
Joe nodded. Carol plopped down on the bench seat next to Joe. Joe moved as far back as she could, making sure she had room to defend herself in case the granny jumped her.
A few months ago, I would have said there was no finer place in the world to raise children, the waitress informed her.
We all looked out for each other, you know. You could leave your car sitting out there on Main Street, keys in the ignition, and the door hanging open, and folks would turn off your headlights to save your battery. This place was packed every day for lunch. She glanced around the deserted restaurant. The guy in the overalls dropped a dollar tip on the counter and took off without a backwards glance.
But now? Joe prompted Carol.
There's something wrong, Carol said, voice low. We've had 3 suicides in the past 2 months. 3 kids. A 14-year-old boy, his 13-year-old best friend, and my neighbor's son that was only 12 years old. And that can't be natural.
Kids. Jesus. Are the cops investigating? Do they think somebody might have done something to the children? Joe asked in a quiet, urgent voice.
Carol's eyes were bright and hard. Sheriff Jay's just fine for rounding up drunks, but he's got no clue what's really going on around here. Few of us in town. We got some ideas on who's been hurting our babies. We'll get it settled, real soon.
She was flushed, excited. Joe had once seen a photo of a group of women setting up a picnic lunch at a lynching. They looked exactly like Carol did right now.
Hey, Carol, Joe interrupted. You think you could get that stew for me? I'm starving.
Carol blinked a few times.
Oh, sure thing, miss. After all, you're eating for 2 now.
Carol slowly got to her feet and headed into the kitchen. Joe rolled her shoulders, which had tensed up as if she were going into a fight.
Ruby, she said. Is that what you're expecting to find?
Ruby opened her eyes.
Yeah, that's Nananoku's work. I'd hoped I was wrong.
The stew didn't taste anywhere near as good as it had smelled, but Joe left a $5 tip anyway. As they left, Joe noticed that the sidewalks were nearly empty. The few people they saw scurried from their cars into their destinations without making eye contact. Joe pulled into the school parking lot with her cover story firmly in place. A nice young wife looking into buying property in town, checking out the local school. She and Ruby walked through a gate into the playground. There was a covered area with a basketball hoop. Ruby picked up a deflated basketball and showed it to Joe. It looked like it had been slashed repeatedly with a knife. The brick wall of the basketball court was covered in graffiti. A devil's head in black spray paint laughed at them. Under the head was scrawled, "The devil made me do it." The top of the graffiti was barely at Joe's chest level. The artist must have been well under 5 feet tall. A bell rang. Joe gestured Ruby back towards the car. They sat on the hood and watched as children ran out onto the playground. One boy shoved another off the slide and started kicking him as he lay on the ground. A teacher snatched the bully up into the air and shook him hard, screaming in the little boy's face.
There, Ruby said suddenly. She nodded at a chubby little blonde girl, maybe 7 years old, in a green corduroy jumpsuit. The girl was standing perfectly still in the middle of the playground, watching as another fight broke out on the other side of the playground. Ruby loosened her knife in its holster and hopped off the hood.
Wait, Joe hissed, grabbing her by the arm. You can't do that.
Ruby looked around.
It is pretty public, but I think the adults will just try to get the rest of the children away from us. And even if they do make a move, they won't be armed. Ananoku's the only real threat.
No, I mean you can't kill that little girl, Joe whisper shouted.
Ruby cocked her head.
Why not? Unless we could kill that big guy, no problem. Ananoku's got some major mojo, but she's no stronger in a stand-up fight.
Christ, it was like trying to describe the color red to a blind woman.
Because it's wrong.
Ruby shifted restlessly, looking at the possessed kid.
Look, you're trying to earn some trust, right?
Joe said desperately. Ruby's attention was suddenly focused completely on her. With me, Mom, Bobby, the Winchesters, you're trying to prove we can trust you.
That's right, Ruby said quietly.
Well, this is the price of that trust. Sometimes you can't do things the easy way. You've got to do it the right way instead.
Ruby stared at her for a few seconds, and then broke into a clear, pealing laugh.
Okay, she said, and got into the car.
Joe was left gaping at her.
What do you mean, okay?
She demanded, as she slid into the driver's seat. Ruby shrugged, smiling.
I mean, okay, whatever you want to do. I assume you have some kind of plan. We're not going to leave Ananoku here to rip the town apart, right?
Well, we need a way to capture the demon, Joe said, and transported to a secure location. Then I can perform an exorcism.
Think I'll skip that part of the program? Ruby said.
But we can pull off a snatch and grab. A bag inscribed with the devil's trap over her head so she doesn't toss you around the room. Then a binding link carved, scratched, she amended at the look on Joe's face, into the meat suit's skin will keep her from zapping or smoking out. That and enough holy water could keep her subdued until we get her somewhere isolated. And Anoku's strong enough that it's going to take a full-on exorcism to send her back to the pit. We're talking maybe 4 hours of chanting in Latin while she screams like you're torturing her. 'Cause you will be. You up for that?
When the alternative is killing a little girl,
yeah, I can do it. Ruby volunteered to keep an eye on the demon and find out where it was living. Joe found a self-storage facility 10 miles off of Route 330, rented a unit, and set up some lighting and a meticulous devil's trap inside. She bought some big collapsible water containers and another water pistol. The minister of the United Methodist Church didn't blink an eye when she asked him to bless 50 gallons of water for her, and he mentioned that he would keep her in his prayers at the evening service. The man must have known there was evil walking his town. At 5 o'clock, she met Ruby outside of Carol's country kitchen. The plan worked. It was a fucking nightmare, but it worked. The demon was bike riding through the park when they grabbed her. It cursed in 12 languages, all the more terrifying in a little girl's voice. Ruby drove like a maniac to get them to the storage facility. Joe tried to avoid splashing her with holy water, especially after one enthusiastic splash nearly sent them headfirst into a tree. Finally, Joe had the demon hogtied in the center of a devil's trap. She scratched through the line of the binding link, doused it with holy water, and pulled the bag off its head. The girl's eyes gleamed in the lamplight.
"This is a pretty little pet you found, Bellona," it called out in a hoarse voice, as Ruby exited the storage container so that Joe could start the ritual romanum. "Bet she tastes like honey and absinthe."
"Princeps, gloriosime calistes milice, sancte Michael Archangele, defende nos in prelio, e colluctatione," Joe began.
The demon howled. Over the hours, between screams, it shouted humiliating details about Joe's life, her hopes, her fantasies. It growled terrifying promises about what it would do to your bitch mistress. When Ruby eventually ended up back in hell, Joe found herself shouting Latin over something that felt like, but wasn't, a wave of sound, until finally her voice was just a cracked husk, muttering the final words of the exorcism. A stream of black smoke spewed from the child's body, and was pulled back down to hell. Joe collapsed to her knees inside the devil's trap, and felt for a pulse in the little girl's throat. There. Fast and thready, but there. Joe topped 100 miles an hour on little two-lane highways to get the girl to the hospital in Grundy. She carried the kid into the ER, shouting for help. The doctors hustled her into an exam room. Joe realized she didn't even know the girl's real name, and split before anyone started asking questions. She called Ruby from the road.
"Joe," Ruby answered on the first ring. "I'm in Conrad, Lillian Avenue, near the school. There's something you need to see."
25 minutes later, Joe pulled up to a bizarre scene. It was the middle of the night. There, in the flickering mix of firelight and the blue-red flash of the emergency vehicles, dozens of people, including the volunteer fire department and county sheriff, were standing around watching a house burn. Joe pulled onto the side of the road and headed towards the crowd. They were oddly quiet. Joe finally spotted Ruby, standing next to Carol.
"What's going on?"
Joe managed in a hoarse whisper.
"Carol, fill her in, would you?" Ruby said, eyes on the burning house. "A little girl disappeared today. They found her bike in the park, but don't worry. We took care of the pervert. He'll never hurt another child."
Joe couldn't make sense of it for a moment. Then her brain made the leap.
"Wait, there's someone in that house?" she squeaked, breaking into a sprint.
Ruby tackled her to the ground.
"Stand down, Joe. It's been burning for a long time," she said in Joe's ear, holding her down with more than human strength until Joe went limp. "Come on, let's get out of here before the locals decide to play Burn the Witch."
Joe followed Ruby back to the car. Ruby settled her in the passenger seat and snipped the seatbelt closed. She got into the driver's seat and pulled out onto the road. Joe dozed off. She woke up sometime later when Ruby pulled into a gas station and asked, "Did the kid make it?"
"Yeah," Joe answered, voice still wrecked.
"Yeah, she did." "Well, that's something anyway," Ruby said. She looked over at Joe. "Don't take it so hard, sweetie. Sometimes doing the right thing isn't enough to make things come out right. You'll learn." She got out to pump the gas, and Joe fell back asleep.
Chapter 6. There were a whole slew of demonic omens in Indiana, and Joe's partner had up and disappeared. Joe had left 7 voice messages for Ruby in the past 24 hours. Last time they'd spoke, Ruby'd said something about being busy with the Winchesters for a couple of days, but that was over a week ago. Dean and Sam weren't picking up either. Both those dicks had been tiptoeing around her ever since Sam's little possession gig, but avoiding her was childish. Joe tried the map ritual, searching for demonic energy. 5 candles, a few drops of blood, a little Latin, but it was no good. The hot spot in Indiana didn't match Ruby, and they'd cleared out everything else. Finally, Joe called Bobby.
Yeah?
Bobby answered after a dozen rings. The one word had Joe on edge. Bobby sounded drunk. You all right, Uncle Bobby?
No,
Bobby barked. It hung in the soft, staticky hum of the phone line. Joe wasn't sure what to say.
You calling to inquire after my general health, or do you need something?
I was wondering if you'd heard from Ruby lately.
Oh, of course. Should have known. You calling to inquire after the demon's health,
Bobby slurred.
Well, girlie, hate to break it to you, but Ruby's gone. Probably dragged back to hell right alongside Dean.
Wait, Joe said. Dean? Dean's dead? She felt bad now, about thinking he was a dick.
I'm buried. Sam wouldn't even let me burn his bones.
Jesus, Sam must be a wreck. Joe suddenly remembered Ananoku's threats. Ruby was back in hell, and because of Joe, because Ruby did the right fucking thing by not killing Ananoku with her knife, that demon was doing all the things it had promised, screamed at her for all those hours. No, she couldn't be responsible for Ruby suffering like that. But maybe there's a way to get her out. Bobby, do you remember that demon-summoning ritual those goth kids got their hands on a couple of years ago? There was a harsh sound from Bobby's end of the phone line that might have been meant as a laugh.
You know, Sam woke me up 3 this morning to ask if lifeblood of an infant and Gibor's Denicritus might be negotiable. You all can just go to hell in your own damn handbaskets. I'm done.
The phone was slammed down, hard. When Joe tried calling Bobby back, all she got was a busy signal. Well, she'd figured out herself. The Olmutz collection at the Notre Dame Library would have the text she needed. She could be there by the time they opened in the morning. The end.
I like you when I'm in a mood. As the crow flies, I go to silver slivers. In your eyes, make it worth every lie I've ever told. They turned to gold. They kept me here. They kept me here on this battlefield. I find out what you're all about when I think to look around. I feel my toes curl halfway around the world. I'm sorry now. There's magic here, and magic's weird. Look, this is you. Head in the clouds, feet underground, and when you shake the dog's tail, I'm gonna live forever. Head in the clouds, feet underground, and when you shake the dog's tail, planet glow, then kicked us out. I keep my nails dug into my half of the rug. I'm sorry now. I'm sorry now. You don't know how. Look, this is you.